Margaret Donna, I've had the pleasure of reading your poems for quite a little while, but I know quite well that you haven't been writing as long as I have.
No, although reading your work has inspired me to try to write as long and as well.
You and I, like many other Negro writers, have long been interested in Africa. Certainly I have.
Yes, Africa became, well, I became aware of Africa through the study of African art as a little girl. We received a newspaper that had a home forum page, and on the home forum page were these pictures that at first seemed to me to be quite ugly. And I must confess that the art interested me before I met the Africans. But when the students came over, I found them to be as strong and beautiful as the art finally turned out to seem to be to me.
I think it's very interesting how the art of ancient Africa has influenced the art of modern Europe.
Yes.
And even the great Pablo Picasso admits to having been influenced by the art of Africa. We're certainly very much a part of history in one way or another for 2,000 or 3,000 years.
Yeah.
And in America, we are, well,
coming into our own.
We are coming into our own, and we have been a part of America for 300 years. Our labor helped to build America. Our art, our music helped to make it a more delightful country in which to live in. And so this poem of mine, A Freedom's Plow, tries to say some of those things, tries to encourage us to keep on creating, keep on living in spite of the difficulties that we still know. It's kind of history of our lives in this country. When a man starts out with nothing, when a man starts out with his hands empty but clean, when a man starts out to build a world, he starts first with himself and the faith that is in his heart, the strength there, the will there to build. First in the heart is the dream. Then the mind starts seeking a way. His eyes look out on the world, on the great wooded world, on the rich soil of the world, on the rivers of the world. The eyes see their materials for building, see the difficulties too, and the obstacles. The mind seeks a way to overcome these obstacles. The hand seeks tools to cut the wood, to till the soil, and harness the power of the waters. Then the hand seeks other hands to help, a community of hands to help. Thus the dream becomes not one man's dream alone, but a community dream. Not my dream alone, but our dream. Not my world alone, but your world and my world, belonging to all the hands who build. A long time ago, but not too long ago, ships came from across the sea bringing pilgrims and prayer makers, adventurers and booty seekers, free men and indentured servants, slave men and slave masters, all new to a new world, America. With billowing sails, the galleons came bringing men and dreams, women and dreams, in little bands together, heart reaching out to heart, hand reaching out to hand, they began to build our land. Some were free hands seeking a greater freedom. Some were indentured hands hoping to find their freedom. Some were slave hands guarding in their hearts the seed of freedom. But the word was there always, freedom. Down into the earth went the plow in the free hands and the slave hands, in indentured hands and adventurous hands. Turning the rich soil went the plow in many hands that planted and harvested the food that fed and the cotton that clothed America. Labor. Out of labor came the villages and the towns that grew to cities. Labor. Out of labor came the rowboats and the sailboats and the steamboats. Came the wagons and the coaches, covered wagons, stagecoaches. Out of labor came the factories, came the foundries, came the railroads. Came the marts and markets, shops and stores. Came the mighty products molded, manufactured, sold in shops, piled in warehouses, shipped the wide world over. Out of labor, white hands and black hands, came the dream, the strength, the will, and the way to build America. Now it is me here and you there. Now it's Manhattan, Chicago, Detroit, Seattle, New Orleans, Boston, and El Paso. Now it is a USA. A long time ago, but not too long ago, a man said, all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. His name was Jefferson. There were slaves then, but in their hearts the slaves believed him too, and silently took for granted that what he said was also meant for them. It was a long time ago, but not so long ago at that. Lincoln said, no man is good enough to govern another man without that other's consent. There were slaves then too, but in their hearts the slaves knew what he said must be meant for every human being, else it had no meaning for anyone. Then a man said, better to die free than to live slaves. He was a colored man who had been a slave but had run away to freedom, and the slaves knew that what Frederick Douglass said was true. With John Brown at Harper's Ferry, Negroes died. John Brown was hung. Before the Civil War, days were dark, and nobody knew for sure when freedom would triumph, or if it would, thought some. But others knew it had to triumph. In those dark days of slavery, guarding in their hearts the seed of freedom, the slaves made up a song. Keep your hand on the plow, hold on. The song meant just what it said. Hold on, freedom will come. Keep your hand on the plow, hold on. America, land created in common, dream nourished in common, keep your hand on the plow, hold on. If the house is not yet finished, don't be discouraged, builder. If the fight is not yet won, don't be weary, soldier. The plan and the pattern is here, woven from the beginning into the warp and woof of America. All men are created equal. No man is good enough to govern another man without that other's consent. Better die free than live slaves. Who said those things? Americans. Who owns those words? America. Who is America? You, me, we are America. To the enemy who would conquer us from without, we say no. To the enemy who would divide and conquer us from within, we say no. Democracy, brotherhood, freedom, to all the enemies of those great words, we say no. A long time ago, an enslaved people heading toward freedom made up a song. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. That plow plowed a new furrow across the field of history. Into that furrow the freedom seed was dropped. From that seed a tree grew, is growing, will ever grow. That tree is for everybody, for all America, for all the world. May its branches spread and its shelter grow until all races and all peoples know its shade. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. Well, when I was a young man, I was a seaman, and my very first trip across the ocean was a trip to Africa, all up and down the West Coast.
Yes, so we've read about this in one of your
in
books.
In the Big Sea,
in the
huh?
Big Sea, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But even before that, I had an interest in Africa. But until I'd gone there, it always seemed to me to be so far away. You know, I grew up in Kansas. In Lawrence and Kansas City, and then later Chicago. And so one of my earliest poems is a poem expressing this feeling of being so remote from my ancestral homeland, a poem called Afro-American Fragment.
Yes, I remember that one.
So long, so far away is Africa. Not even memories alive, save those that history books create, save those that songs beat back into the blood, beat out of blood with words sad sung in strange, un-Negro tongue. So long, so far away is Africa. Subdued and time-lost are the drums, and yet, through some vast mist of race, there comes this song I do not understand, this song of atavistic land, of bitter yearnings lost without a place. So long, so far away is Africa's dark face. But of course, that's no longer really true today. In this day of the jet plane, of the rapid transfer of news from one continent to another, I don't think any of us feel so far away from Africa as we once did. I know you have written many beautiful poems about Africa, Margaret. Would you want to read one for us?
Thank you. My first poem about Africa has the feeling of far away, too. Africa, I turn to meet this vast land of bittersweet. Africa, where creviced walls cradle myriad waterfalls. Africa, where black men stride through the ever-turning tide. Africa, I read these things, her blood drifting through me sings.
Of course, when we were brought from Africa, we were brought here in chains as slaves. Now, Africans come to us as ambassadors from free Africa, from their own country. This poem of mine is about the new Africa. Sleepy giant, you've been resting a while. Now I see the thunder and the lightning in your smile. Now I see the storm clouds in your waking eyes. The thunder, the wonder, and the young surprise. Your every step reveals the new stride in your thighs. Africa.
Yes, the theme now is quite popular. But when you were writing about Africa, very few people were. Even when I began to write about it, it was not as well appreciated as
no,
it is
you're,
now.
You're quite mm-hmm. right. It mm-hmm. wasn't. Mm-hmm. And when I first began to write, I wrote mostly about our problems that we have right here in America. You may know a poem of mine called Merry-Go-Round. You remember when the great migration of Negro workers from the South to the North occurred? They came up to work in war plants and so on. Mm-hmm. And I imagined that a family, a small family, might have moved from, let's say, Birmingham to Chicago, or perhaps from Virginia to New York, or maybe from Texas to California. And they brought a little girl with them, 6 or 7 years old, as I imagined her in my mind, and coming out of a part of our country where Jim Crow and segregation is legal, coming into the North or the West, this little girl was a bit confused to how things might go. And one day, she went to a carnival. And at the carnival, she saw a merry-go-round going around, and she wanted to ride. But being a little child from the South, she wasn't quite sure that colored children could ride on a merry-go-round in the North. And if they could ride, she didn't know where. So this is what she said. Where is the Jim Crow section on this merry-go-round, mister? 'Cause I want to ride. Down South where I come from, white and colored can't sit side by side. Down South on the train, there's a Jim Crow car. On the bus, we're put in the back. But there ain't no back to a merry-go-round. Where's a horse for a kid that's black?
This is, to me, one of your best poems. I feel that there's no other way to have said this particular thing. I have written a poem that started out to be one thing and ended up to be quite a different thing.
Well, pretty often does
that, you know? Yes, and it's always surprising. This one was about the first gorilla in Lincoln Park Zoo.
Oh, yes, I like that part.
His name was Bushman, and I thought that I loved him. I still feel that I love Bushman, but the poem showed me that I was much more concerned with the boys and girls who had come from the South and had no place to live. There was this awful housing shortage in Chicago, and all of this came out quite surprisingly to me in the poem. The title of it is Best Loved of Africa. It is New Year's Day. The blasé people rise. They face a sleet-like ray of light. The low-slung skies send shadows down. It's dark. The earth is treacherous to the tread, and deep in the upstairs bedroom of his terraced suite in Lincoln Park lies Bushman, best loved of Africa, huge and beautifully black as he ever was, but dead.
Oh, what a poem. In the great black belts of Chicago and Detroit and New York, there are many problems. But life is not all problems, but there are plenty of problems. And one of the contemporary problems that has interested me greatly, and about which there seems to me so little is being done, is the problem of narcotics. I'd like to read you a poem of mine called Junior Addict. The little boy who sticks a needle in his arm and seeks an out in other worldly dreams, who seeks an out in eyes that droop and ears that close to Harlem screams, cannot know, of course, and has no way to understand a sunrise that he cannot see beginning in some other land, but destined sure to flood, and soon, the very room in which he leaves his needle and his spoon, the very room in which today the air is heavy with the drug of his despair. Yet little can tomorrow's sunshine give to one who will not live. Quick, sunrise, come, before the mushroom bomb pollutes his stinking air with better death than is his living here, with viler drugs than bring today's release in poison from the fallout of our peace. It's easier to get dope than it is to get a job. Yes, easier to get dope than to get a job. Daytime or nighttime job, teenage, pre-draft, pre-life job. Quick, sunrise, come. Sunrise out of Africa, quick, come. Sunrise, come. Please come. Come.
This is a very strong poem. It's the first time I've heard it. The problem is frightening, and we hope that soon there will be an answer.
Well, you and I as artists know that one of the problems which we have is that many of the fine things in American art have been originated by the Negro people.
Yes.
The most popular music known all around the world, jazz, came right out of the beat of the African drums and out of the improvisations of the early New Orleans Negro musicians. The most popular songs, right out of our own folklore, our own folk background. Many of the most successful Broadway musicals have, in the old days, been written by Negroes. 30, 40, 50 years ago, Williams and Walker,
yeah,
and others. Mm-hmm. But then came a period in which they were written by whites, but about Negroes, you know?
Yes.
Foggy and Bess, and
yes.
Carmen Jones, and so on. I once wrote a poem called Note on Commercial Theater, which perhaps says these things better than I can say them conversationally. You've taken my blues and gone. You sing them on Broadway and you sing them in Hollywood Bowl, and you mixed them up with symphonies and you fixed them so they don't sound like me. Yep, you've done taken my blues and gone. You also took my spirituals and gone. You put me in Macbeth and Carmen Jones and all kind of swing Mikados and in everything but what's about me. But someday somebody will stand up and talk about me and write about me, black and beautiful, and sing about me and put on plays about me. I reckon it'll be me, myself. Yes, it'll be me.
Yes, and it is you.
Well, not me. I'm speaking of the artist in general.
Yes, I know, but you. I'm speaking
it's,
of you.
It's Gwendolyn Brooks. Mm-hmm. It's Ralph Ellison. It's others of our very fine writers to just dwell on the writing field.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have, I think, splendid creators in other fields of the arts as well. You know, we've come to a sort of impasse in race relations. We've had all the wonderful demonstrations and marches and freedom rides, and wonderful words have been spoken, and many of those words that have been spoken about the Negro problem in America have been very sincere words, sometimes even great words. But on the other hand, all of the word mongers are not really very, well, shall we say, very helpful. Even though they are sincere, they say these words, but they don't implement them. And so I call this poem Sweet Words from Liberals on Race. Sweet words that take their own sweet time to flower and then so quickly wilt within the inner ear belie the budding promise of their pristine hour to wither in the sultry air of fear. Sweet words so brave when danger is not near, I've heard so many times before. I'd just as leave not hear them anymore.
I agree with that most heartily.